Welcome to SolidWorks Heard, a show about tools, tips, and technologies surrounding SolidWorks engineering and the web. This is episode 472 for April 13, 2014, April Tech News. Well, hi, and welcome to SolidWorks Heard. I'm Lou Gallo. Well, today we're going to talk about tech news, tech alerts, all kinds of stuff. The monthly FAQ actually just came out today, so we'll get that in there as well as a bunch of industry news. You know, April is one of those months, too, where we're right before the developer conferences. We're typically right before about a month or so before beta comes out for SolidWorks. So, you know, really it's kind of in that realm of kind of summertime where we start to wind down all of the stuff that we learned at SolidWorks World. Some of the products actually start to ship. And actually this month, SolidWorks Inspection, as well as kind of our first glints of Mechanical Conceptual, are now available as well. Now, on the Mechanical Conceptual side, I've finally got access and have been able to get in there and start kind of getting my feet wet on some of the technology. They have started pushing up these kind of webisodes talking about how Mechanical Conceptual, you know, kind of the workflow of it, some of the features. And again, this was pseudo-demoed at SolidWorks World. I mean, obviously, they spent a lot of stage time on it, but really getting into the nuts and bolts of it, I attended a lot of sessions at SolidWorks World around this tool, really to get a good understanding of workflow, because I think that's really a big question mark for a lot of users is how does Mechanical Conceptual actually integrate into what we're doing now? How does it work with SolidWorks? How does it not work with SolidWorks? What are the big pieces that really start to make sense? And so they're trying to really give you some insight and paint the picture of what this tool is supposed to do. Now, in addition to, you know, SolidWorks type news, there's also a lot of stuff on the kind of generic tech industry front. And I'll kind of finish up with that at the end of the show. So let's go ahead and jump in. We'll talk a little bit about what's happening up on the tech blog, and we'll roll over to tech alerts and as well as the support news. So let's take a look at the April tech news. So I figure what we do is just start over at the SolidWorks tech blog. So remember, blogs.solidworks.com/tech. And I believe we were right around the 15th of March. So if we just kind of roll back, you'll see there's a couple of really interesting posts. Actually, I think some of these we touched on last tech news. The first one that's actually pretty cool is talking about the SolidWorks mold tools. This is a three-part video series, and you can watch those and kind of walk through the different the different tools that are there and kind of what they offer. But one of the posts that I really liked and I think is always a growing challenge, and I think it's really, if you don't have PDM, it's one of those things that kind of bites us, is working over the network. Now, there was a post last week about that, but this one really does a good job. This is by Desai Solutions, and they talk really on some of the things that are actually happening when working over the network. And it's pretty neat. You know, the network is obviously, it comes with that benefit that it is a single point that you can share data and you don't worry about copies. But the challenging part is that there's always write problems and people may have it checked out or used and it won't allow you to open it. And there's a sharing violation and all the stuff that we run into. But I thought this did a really good job illustrating some of the challenges. When you're working over the network, they kind of show that every time you do a checkout or you request a file, you go from your local NIC card, your network card, through your router, switch, hub, whatever, and then you go into the server's network card, and then you actually talk to the server's hard drive. Once you get the information from there, then it goes backwards through that same thing. So then it goes back through the server's network card, through your router and switch and infrastructure, and then to your local NIC card and back to your RAM. And because this process can really add that latency, you essentially tack on about a 20% fee, and that fee is typically in performance and read writes. So this is something that they kind of address and talk a little more about it. They obviously say that, you know, when you're working locally, you have that benefit of just being able to work off of that drive, and the back and forth between the drive and RAM and everything that's happening on the system is obviously pretty much instantaneous. That's one of the things that's nice about PDM is obviously it takes advantage of that. It does a cached copy and maintains the communication between the rest of the users, but allows you to get all that performance of the local. And then when you're ready, you then do the push over to the server. So I think that was just I thought it was a very well-written post to kind of illustrate some of the challenges and reasons why we use network connectivity, but how, you know, a PDM system can kind of address that. In addition to this, there was a couple other interesting posts. Again, I'll just read some topics or titles because they may interest you. Animating rotary motor or motion in SolidWorks. This was over by Graphics Systems. There's another one, another good one, especially for those of you that are dealing with a lot of maybe scan data or reverse engineering data. Imported files. The title's Turning Surfaces into Solids in SolidWorks. Obviously, utilizing a lot of the import diagnostics and tools that you have available to you. A few other things that were interesting too, and this is something that does come in quite a bit through support channels, is when customers are looking at the license manager. This is known as the Solid Network License Manager, or SNL. And there's a good write-up by Fisher Unitech talking a little bit about what you see in there and what actually the feedback of it, what it means when it's purchased, what if you purchase something specifically, what it actually shows up in the license manager, and how that all works. So they have a bunch of screenshots, and I thought it was kind of a good clarity, especially for those of you that are managing the network. Now, this next one is actually pretty cool. This is from Solid Experts. This is a long time trick, and I think a lot of people always ask if they ever see a video of it, and that's the progressive cut in animation with SolidWorks. And they talk a little bit about, you know, being able to kind of dynamically cut across a model, and it makes it look like it's kind of, you know, peeling the outside away. And this is pretty cool because they show you kind of a step-by-step doing the animation, how to use the feature scope and some of the other functionalities that are inside of SolidWorks. But I thought it was a good post because, I think when people see that, that's the first thing they usually ask me is, hey, how did you do that? And this is a pretty good step-by-step. Another good one here is how to design a garage in SolidWorks. This is over by 3D Vision. And this is kind of a neat post, kind of showing you the step-by-step. Obviously, my background while I was in school, and obviously the family business, was home building. So I spent a lot of time framing and building structure. So it was kind of cool. They've got steps and things like that in here. And I just thought it was a pretty neat little blog post. Now, as far as some of the other things that they posted, there were, and this is something that is pretty evident inside of the SolidWorks Tech blog, is there is a lot of part reviewer posts. So definitely make sure to check those out. They're obviously real good step-by-steps and show you how some of these things are built, but I figured I'd pass over those during this podcast. Another one here is about using SolidWorks plastics. I don't know if you guys are utilizing that. We talked about the fact that plastics actually pushed out an advanced module right around SolidWorks world. But I think if you're not familiar with it, or actually just trying to get an idea of how you utilize plastics in mold design, there's a good one by TMS CAD Center on April 3rd. Another quick, nice tutorial by Symmetry Solutions called Loop Selection. Again, just kind of using some of the selection tools and showing you what that tool actually does. And these are the posts that I always look for, and I think these are always good. Hidden Gems of SolidWorks. This is by Graphics Systems. And he talks a little bit about the sensor functionality. This is something that I think a lot of people kind of associate with simulation specifically, but there is some things inside of here too with mass properties, dimensions, and measurements that you can get little alerts to know when something maybe exceeds a design kind of constraint. And I think a lot of people may see it up there, but obviously if you've used simulation before, this is a great way of basically getting feedback, especially if you're doing any type of iterative analysis. But it is something that I think can be very beneficial if you just want to use it inside of SolidWorks for just some kind of awareness when those limits get hit. And they show more of kind of the simulation functionalities of it. But I always thought it's always good to read those to kind of either make yourself reaware of them and what they can do to kind of help you out. And the last thing on here that we'll talk about is there's another one posted on electrical. Now, obviously, electrical has been going through, quite a bit of adoption. A lot of companies are out there, kind of scooping it up and getting a lot of feedback to SolidWorks and, obviously addressing this. And one of the things that's pretty common when you're doing electrical design is I/O. And when you're doing wire numbering and PLCs, this actually kind of hits home as well, because I used to do a lot of PLC programming. And this is something that you do typically have to get out there. Your schematics have to lay out and show how things go together. And, this is something that's critical to any type of machine design. So I think this was a good post, kind of gives you an idea of how SOLIDWORKS Electrical handles these type of situations and how you approach them. So, check that one out. So I figured we switch gears a little bit and talk about tech alerts. SOLIDWORKS 2014 SP3 is currently available for early visibility. It's been out for a couple of weeks now, so we should see that official release be out here shortly. There was a tech alert that was posted about SOLIDWORKS Hole Wizard and Toolbox basically stop working once you installed Kaspersky antivirus. Now, they have some more details up here. On April 10th, they posted this. So this was just yesterday of this recording. It says, SOLIDWORKS technical support is currently investigating an issue that is affecting SOLIDWORKS users that are running Hole Wizard and Toolbox on machines with Kaspersky antivirus software installed. Under these conditions, users may find that SOLIDWORKS will generate the following master database error when accessing the Hole Wizard and Toolbox. It'll say, cannot open the Microsoft Jet Engine workgroup information file. This issue has been found to be related with Kaspersky, and it was related with an update that was pushed on April 9th, 2014. So they do have a couple of things in here to mention. It says to fix the issue, perform a search on C Windows folder for a file named SystemMDB. And you'll find this, it was created on 4.9. 2014, and will have a file size of 0 kilobytes. So it says delete the file, reboot the PC, and relaunch SOLIDWORKS and verify that Hole Wizard and Toolbox are functioning. So this is one of those things that, you know, when it hits hard, and pretty much everybody knows about it. So I'm glad there's a workaround. It looks like Kaspersky pushed this update and screwed something up. So obviously this is something that hopefully will be remedied, but if you're affected by this, it looks like the fix is pretty straightforward. Now, this wasn't really a tech alert, but I figured it kind of fits here pretty well, is My.SOLIDWORKS. We've talked about that at My.SOLIDWORKS.com. You can log in. This is where you can get all your kind of feeds and tech blogs and everything that SOLIDWORKS news and related stuff. But they did add a new area called Learning. And what's kind of cool about it is that if you go up there, you can look at Learning. You'll see a kind of a tab at the top. And if you click on Learning, you can get an overview, and it'll show all these different lessons. So, for example, I just clicked on one that said Weldment Features, Layout Sketches, and Structural Members. And you can add it to your own Learning. So you can look at My Learning or My Lessons. And, you know, when you click on the My Lessons, everything that you kind of tagged will be here. And what's cool about it is that if you click on it, it'll open up in another tab, and it plays a kind of a step-by-step. So it gives you an introduction. It allows you to download the file that they're working on, so you can, you know, actually use SOLIDWORKS side-by-side with it. And then they give you a couple of presentations and a review. And again, it's all embedded. It works in a tab. There's nothing you have to install or anything. And it's very well done. It kind of reminds me of Solid Professor a little bit. But, you know, there's quite a bit of lessons up here. I mean, if I look at just like the overview of all of the lessons that are up here, seems to be quite a bit, and you can filter and narrow and search through all of the lessons, but this is kind of a neat way of having kind of a self-service learning center and be able to watch videos and have it a little bit more concise of from a learning standpoint, not just, you know, like a YouTube video. So if you haven't checked it out in a while, it's probably it's worth it. I think it's actually very well done and should help out a lot of people. Now, as I sat down to record today, I was kind of flipping through the tech alerts, and I was really hoping that Julian had pushed the monthly news, and I hadn't seen it, and then I refreshed this morning, and sure enough, there's the SOLIDWORKS support monthly news. So I wanted to talk about this. Obviously, he breaks it down quite a bit. And the first couple of pieces you have in here is, we talked about this last time, but the SOLIDWORKS World 2014 Proceedings website is available. So if you were unable to go to SOLIDWORKS World, this is where you can download all the presentations and watch videos and everything that that happened at SOLIDWORKS World. Now, Spotlight and Features is kind of his highlight of functionality. And the first Spotlight on Features is improvement to the Animation Property Manager in SOLIDWORKS Simulation 2014. talk a little bit about the updates. Playback speed can be much slower than previously possible, give you more time to visualize each frame. The previous limit was 100 steps, and it's now up to 1,000, so you can really kind of tune it in and make it very, very smooth and slow to see exactly what's happening. For nonlinear transient thermal and time history studies, the default step increment is equal to 1, allowing you to easily animate time steps. So pretty cool. And then bolt connection symbols update the location and orientation with the deformed geometry. So again, better visualization overall. Another spotlight on features is sheet metal, flat pattern performance improvements, anyone? And he kind of gets into the topics and the system options and some of the performance that can be enabled. One of them is really just in the system options under performance of SOLIDWORKS. There's a checkbox that said verification on rebuild, enable advanced body checking. And you essentially just want to clear that, and you'll start to see some pretty good performance in your flat patterns. And the last one, the last spotlight is on scale sketch with first dimension in SOLIDWORKS. This was a huge thing. I think a lot of people that saw this in the rollouts were very excited about it. And what this is, if you're not aware, is when you do that initial sketch, and so you start a new part and you select a plane and you start sketching, and you kind of get it proportionally and visually accurate the way you think it is, and you slap that first dimension on there, and all of a sudden the thing kind of folds into itself and always used to scale to the exact size. And what it does in 2014 is when you put that first dimension on, it scales the actual entire sketch to match that dimension. Therefore, when you put all of the other dimensions on, it kind of stays in proportion. And this is a big deal. I think it really makes it much more intuitive to start. And they have a couple of points he points out here. He says, a few additional points about this functionality. The scale sketch will remain its relation to the origin just as before the scaling was applied. And after the scale was applied, to view the zoom to fit automatically will change the zoom scaling, giving the impression that the scale has not been changed. But it essentially has. So, again, some pretty cool little enhancements and something really to be aware of. Now, for noteworthy solutions from the SOLIDWORKS knowledge base, these are usually things that got a lot of hits and are new to the knowledge base. And again, I always explain that, you know, these little details that I always notice is he always puts the icon of the product. So the first one here is for SOLIDWORKS. It says, what are the firewall settings required for SOLIDWORKS electrical? Another one here for simulation, unable to interpolate nodal temperatures and thermal stress analysis error message and how and what to do with that. Another one here is for plastics. It says, why can't a user-defined machine be added to the SOLIDWORKS plastic injection molding machine database in SOLIDWORKS Plastics 2014? And the last one on here is for enterprises. What could be the reason that double-clicking or right-click open a file in Enterprise PDM Vault does not open a particular file type associated application, but opening the same file in the local Explorer file does open it without any problem. So again, all these have solution IDs, and you can kind of dig in more to the specifics of it, but I thought it was a really good FAQ this month and or news this month, and I think it's definitely worth a read. Now, this last section is always on industry news, and this previous week included the date of April 8th. Now, April 8th was a big date in Microsoft's terms because there was a lot of things that happened on that day. The first one is that Windows XP and IE6 were officially retired. And believe it or not, for 13 years, that's been out. XP is one of those funny operating systems to me because I remember it very clearly when it launched because it was one of the first. It actually launched the month I started working at Digital Dimensions. And, you know, seeing it always there and it being the new kid on the block, and then, you know, everyone in those days were complaining about the whole switch to a 32-bit OS and possibly coming from, you know, what was it, Windows 98 or some of the just miserable. I mean, we had so many different support versions that at that time, you know, there was dropping support of NT4 and, you know, there's Windows 2000 out there. And then obviously 98 second edition and Millennium. And oh, it was just, it's amazing how much time has gone by, but it has officially been killed. It's done. There is no patches or anything coming unless you have some special, you know, extended warranty with Microsoft that most likely you do not. So it is definitely time to move on. I mean, obviously, since then, there's been a lot of OSs shipped, 4 to be exact. Obviously, Vista came out, Windows 7 came out, Windows 8 came out, and Windows 8.1 came out. So another thing that happened on this date also for Microsoft is that Windows 8.1 Update 1 came out. And for those of you that, you know, maybe saw Windows 8 the first time around and were not impressed, or maybe it just kind of aggravated you a little bit because all the touch kind of centric interfaces, Windows 8.1 was definitely a succession to that. And I think many of you have heard me talk about it. But Update 1 really made, I think, a lot of strides to embrace the desktop user. Now, despite, I think, a lot of very traditional desktop users that don't like the start screen, I actually like it. I think it's, I've been using it now since Windows 8 came out, so well over a year plus, and I'm very comfortable with it. I actually like it because it's very search-centric and things like that. I don't touch the screen, even though it kind of looks like I should, but I think Windows 8.1 does a couple of main things. The first thing is that it really kind of cleans up the interface. The first thing that it does from the standpoint of launch is that it will notice if you have never set it up and you're on a desktop system or a non-touch-based system, it'll automatically boot to desktop. So it'll feel like Windows 7, almost identically. The start button's always available. You don't have to hover over it to get it to show. A lot of the edge UIs that were essentially you had to kind of hover your mouse on the edge of your screens to see things that pop up on the left-hand side would be kind of your open, you know, your open Metro apps and other things that are running. And then if you hovered on the right-hand side, you'd have all of the little, it's escaping my mind, but you'll have the charms area where you have all the access to search and things like that. And I think the big departure is that they finally said, you know what, if you launch a Windows 8 app, that's one of those apps that are full screen, it actually launches in the taskbar, so you see it in the taskbar. If it's running, you'll see it in the taskbar. The taskbar is also very always visible, whether you're in a Metro app or you're in a traditional desktop app. And I think it just, for most people, is going to give them the comfort of they can use Windows 8.1, Update 1, just like Windows 7. But obviously you're on the latest and greatest and you're up to date. So I think Windows 8.1 really is kind of the official, it's probably what Windows 8 should have been. But I think that if you've been holding off, it's probably time to take a look again and definitely check it out. So as you can see, Microsoft has been incredibly busy. They obviously, you know, are pretty wrapped up on that April 8th day. But another thing that happened is Office for the iPad was launched. Now, we have had the ability to do kind of the Office 365 subscription-based, you know, functionality on the iPad and many mobile devices. But this one is really focused on kind of a revamped interface. They do give you the ability to view and edit without having a 365 subscription, which is their cloud-based subscription of Office. But some of the big things that are different is that they've added a couple of unique interfaces. They give you full document functionality and support within the iPad. They've kind of reorganized a lot of the menus and the selection sets, so it definitely has a very robust set of features. You know, they've integrated a kind of a custom numerical input screen. So when you're editing like spreadsheets, you're going to have a very kind of spreadsheet-centric interface. They have a virtual laser pointer and PowerPoint. So there's some pretty cool functionalities that they've added. So the big piece on the iPad part is that it's free and you can get it and view documents without any problems and connect to your OneDrive and all the stuff that you would have in your, kind of your Microsoft ecosystem. The one big thing though is that if you want to do any editing or any new creation, you do have to have a 365 subscription. So despite the fact that it is free and it will give you support, so if you have documents up there you want to preview or look at, you know, it's a free functionality that you can download. But other than that, there are supposed to be some specifics that will ship across Android and other devices as well. But the iPad version, they've kind of tweaked a couple of specific interfaces, and I would imagine that you're going to see very shortly. I know they did this at the Build conference that just happened at Microsoft as well, where they've launched the touch-centric Office for Surface 2 and a lot of the other tools out there. But Microsoft has had a very busy couple of weeks, and when they're in the middle of their Build conference last week, that had a lot of news that came out. But Windows 8.1 Update 1 is definitely a good shot, and if you haven't taken a look, it's probably worthwhile to take a look. Another thing that happened this past week is Amazon released its Fire TV. It's a streaming box that competes with Apple TV and the Roku and Chromecast and all the other, you know, features that are out there. One of the things that's kind of unique about it is that you can also buy a controller and play games on it. It has a remote control that you can talk to. So there's some interesting things. Amazon is definitely getting into the hardware business a lot more heavy. I mean, obviously, we've seen all of the tablet growth from the, you know, from the first Kindle all the way up to the Fire. And so it's kind of interesting to see what Amazon does. They definitely shake things up a bit. Dropbox. Many of you are probably Dropbox users this week. Dropbox actually made it easier to handle business and personal editions. If you have a business account for Dropbox, as we do here at DDI, you know, you can actually integrate it with your personal accounts and be able to switch between those two on your mobile devices. So that's kind of a nice feature. I know not a lot of mobile devices only allow you to have a single account tethered to your mobile device. So this is kind of nice. And especially if you have the desktop syncing app, you usually only are able to do it with that. So this is giving you some kind of cross account functionality. Now, the last thing I want to touch on is just going to be very brief. I would almost call it kind of an internet PSA, public service announcement. But this past week, something had come out that I think many of the mass public is not aware of, and it's a vulnerability in the OpenSSL libraries. And this may not make sense to you, but what that essentially means is that this is a thing called Heartbleed. You may see it kind of littered through your feeds and news and stuff like that. And the long and the short of it is that essentially this library is used for a lot of SSL, or when you ever go to a website and get HTTPS, right? That is a secure socket layer lockdown site. And sometimes you use these open libraries. So a lot of websites that use Apache and a lot of these web servers will utilize these open libraries to lock their sites down. Well, there was some vulnerabilities discovered that have been available and open for 2 years. So sites that were affected by this that utilize these libraries have been able to be basically hacked by hackers that are aware of this exploit. So what does it mean to you? Well, a couple of things. First thing is if you just start searching on the web for Heartbleed, you'll see that there's a lot of utilities out there to see what online resources that you use and if they have been affected. If they have been affected, it is best to make sure that they've been corrected or patched and then change your password. If they haven't been fixed, don't bother changing your password until they fix it. So that's kind of the rule of thumb. The exploit does have some limitations to it, but it is a vulnerability nonetheless. It essentially allows a hacker, if they know about the exploit, to leak about 64K of whatever's in RAM on that web server. And so they, after 64K, it'll basically cut the connection, and then you can reestablish a connection and leak another 64K right out of the RAM of that web server. So there's some definite big no-nos that are happening there. But I think the rule of thumb as a consumer is do an assay. It's what I'm doing. Do an assay of all the accounts that you have online. Search on the web to find Heartbleed detectors where you can type in a service and they'll tell you if they are infected or not, or they're afflicted or not. And if they've patched it or they're not affected, then go ahead and change your password. Some of these services, you may have gotten emails over the last couple of weeks saying that there is an issue. And if you want to read more about the specifics, you can go to heartbleed.com. They detail it out to exactly what it is, what happens, how do you stop it, and best practices to kind of ensure that you're safe. So I think it's important. A lot of people have said on a scale of 1 to 10, this is an 11 as far as a severity rating. So it is something that you have to make sure of. The Heartbleed name is really kind of after a component in there called Heartbeat. And that was the component that failed. So they called it Heartbleed. But it is something that even if you're not a technical person or you hear the opening of, oh, this is an OpenSSL library flaw, and you tune out, don't. Make sure that you take the time to lock these things down and you know, make sure that your passwords have been changed after those sites have actually been patched. All right, well, sorry I had to go long there. I definitely wanted to make sure to cover that last piece because I think it's very important. And I know many of you that are out there that maybe have been listening a long time is something that I always have my ear to the ground on. And I figured I would pass it along because I think it's an important thing to be aware of. But as far as the technology front, I mean, all things considered, it's been a pretty busy month. And I think the other side of it is that if you haven't looked at upgrading your Windows or you have XP somewhere in your systems, definitely take a look at 8.1. And the update 1 is not really optional. It is going to push it. And I think it's definitely a welcome update. So take a look at Windows 8.1 again. And a lot of good stuff coming. I'm hoping that that May has a whole bunch of stuff to get us excited on the tech front as well. But I'll keep you posted on the mechanical conceptual side because I am digging in now that I have licenses installed and I'm checking it out, and I should have some things to talk about soon enough. So take care, and I'll talk to you next week.
If you have any questions or comments about this episode, you can hit the comments section or email me at lou@solidworksfirst. Don't forget to follow The Herd on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook by searching for SolidWorks Herd. This episode of SolidWorks Herd was sponsored by Digital Dimensions, Forward Engineering Solutions, online at www.dbicad.com. Music is provided by 21 Against by the means of Music Alley at musicalley.com.